Ari Rosenbaum here with another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. Listening now, we finally escaped 2020, and now we're at 2021, so Happy New Year. Of course, let's talk about the topic for this week is when a plan sponsor may have to fire their 401k financial advisor. As I said it a few weeks back, you're hired to be fired. But there are some reasons why a 401k financial advisor should be fired. But of course, first things first, our big event in just 3 weeks, that 401k National Virtual Conference, January 21, 22, 2021. Walt Frazier, Doc Gooden, Congressman Jamie Raskin, who unfortunately lost his son this week. Ron Uring, Retireholics, 2 days of fun, $33.33. Sign up today. Go to n401ksite.com. Within a week, we'll have a basic agenda of the probably about 10 hours of content over spread over 2 days. You sign up at n401ksite.com. And the beauty of it, all virtual. But most importantly, it's going to be recorded, so therefore, if you have to go to the restroom or you have a client meeting and you have to leave, you can always later get a copy of it and get a copy of the recording and watch later. So it'll be available to you. And again, $33.33. You want autographs, there's a bump up. Go to that 401ksite.com. For further information. As we progress in 2021, hopefully we'll be announcing some live events. Again, Minnesota for June. Hopefully there'll be a networking event that we'll be talking about in July at Citi Field. It'll be just a general networking event, not just 401k related. And then we'll reschedule the St. Louis and Houston events, as well as planning some other 2021 events. Maybe a New York, another New York related event. We'll see how it progresses. You know, the way the vaccine is going, there's a prediction it would take several years, but I believe that within the next couple months, we'll certainly ramp up inoculations and life can get back somewhat to normal. So, firing a financial advisor is difficult. Unfortunately, it happens. Financial advisors really serve as the ombudsman for the plan sponsor. They're usually that plan provider that the plan sponsor relies on. If something goes wrong with the TPA or the ERISA attorney or the auditor, it's always somebody they can rely on. And unfortunately, there are going to be situations where the plan sponsor is going to have to say adios, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye. And first things first, having an advisor that doesn't disclose their fee. And it doesn't really happen as often anymore because I think, you know, thanks to the fee disclosure, people are more transparent. But they are still advisors out there that kind of hide the ball. I think that their disclosures are a little vague, deceptive, not truly clear. So the plan sponsor really doesn't have a full idea of disclosing the basic fee. You know, I'm charging you 25 basis points or whatever it is. It should be something, especially for an advisor, it should be something very, very clear. TPA charges, you know, they charge so-and-so and per head and asset-based or whatever it may be. But advisors should be rather straightforward and simple. And if it's not, that is certainly a reason that the advisor should be terminated. Next is, obviously, the fee is unreasonable. 401k plan sponsors, as we know, have a fiduciary duty to pay reasonable plan expenses. And I will state, as long as I live, that doesn't mean you have to pick the cheapest provider. You have to make sure that the fees are reasonable based on the services provided. You know, as a 401k plan sponsor, you know, they have the right to pay more for a higher level of service. You know, if they hire a 321 fiduciary and they want a 338 fiduciary, they could pay extra and get somebody who will act in a 338 setting. And of course, the only way to determine whether fees are reasonable or not is to actually shop the plan around, or by benchmarking the fees through a service or a book or whatnot. In terms of unreasonableness, you know, people are charging consistent. I don't see anything outrageous, but I'll never forget years ago. I always use this as a perfect example for that retirement plan tune-up, which is that $750 fee that most plan sponsors don't want to pay because they think everything's okay. But years ago, I was reached out by I had a plan sponsor, medical practice in Pennsylvania, and they wanted me to review the plan. It was a $14 million 401k plan. They had a broker on the plan, I think was related to one of the doctors in the practice. So the main doctor, the head doctor in the practice, wasn't a big fan of the advisor. So I did the review of the plan, and I asked for basic stuff. I asked for investment policy statement. I asked for, you know, plan education materials. There is no investment policy statement. There are no education materials. The advisor hasn't been seen. He's a broker. He hasn't been seen in years. And on top of that, he's getting 60 basis points on a $14 million plan. I'm not a math major, but 60 basis points on a $14 million plan is $84,000 in commissions. I advised that to the client, you know, do the plan review. The plan was really up to snuff. It was a safe harbor 401k plan. Everything on the administrative side, I forget who the TPA was, everything on the administrative side was perfect. But this was this big problem on the advisor. And I said again, the fee was unreasonable because the broker wasn't doing their job. You know, I said, not only is it unreasonable in this day and age, it's even more unreasonable because he wasn't doing any of the work. You know, he was what I used to always call the milk carton advisor. That's the advisor who has been around, has not been seen in such a long time that he's like a missing person that should be put on a milk carton. So I said, you know, he's not doing his job. And even if he was doing his job, 60 basis points was too much. And I told the client, you know, you're breaching fiduciary duty because your fees that you're paying are unreasonable. And you're working with an advisor who's just not doing their job. Of course, as a result, the plan sponsor listened to me and fired the broker and hired instead a very well-known regional 338 fiduciary who is going to button down all the, you know, buttons on the plan and was only going to charge 25 basis points. And, you know, fee disclosure regulations 2012 kind of changed a lot of these habits where, you know, somebody was going to make 60 basis points and get away with not doing their work. Fee disclosure really created a transparency that really open up the business, open up the eyes of plan sponsors, and really change the practice, really brought down fees, really got plan sponsors to understand the nature of their role as a plan fiduciary, the nature of how plan providers work, and what they had to do to make sure that they're exercising their fiduciary duty in a prudent manner. So, you know, again, thanks to fee disclosure, thanks to ability to benchmark fees, a plan sponsor who identifies that their advisor's fee is unreasonable now knows that they have to get rid of their advisor. So that advisor was getting 60 basis points, wasn't communicating with their plan sponsor at all. I mean, you know, not showing up in years, not sitting down every 6 months, every year to talk about the fiduciary process and the investments in the plan, and plan education, and enrollment meetings, and all that kind of stuff. When you're out of sight, you're out of mind. You know, it's not like it used to be. You know, the competitive marketplace with retirement plans, thanks to fee disclosure, you're not really having as many advisors who just don't do anything on the plan, just collect a fee. But there are a few people out there that do that still to this day. But, you know, ultimately, a 401k plan really needs to meet with their financial advisor, in my opinion, at least semi-annually. Quarterly, you know, if the plan is certainly larger, they need to sit down, review the plan, the investment lineup, and obviously conduct those participant enrollment education meetings. You know, you need somebody who, you know, shows up, does their work, and more importantly, is communicating with you over the status of the 401k plan. You know, how many advisors, when you know, the market started to go south in March, neglected their clients and kind of told them, instead of telling them, you know, hold on, don't worry, you know, maybe this is the time to buy, if they were incommunicado, if they were just not there, you know, that's a problem. Communication is key. I always have an expression where, you know, when it comes to friends or family, I needed you. You weren't there. I don't need you anymore. Which means that, you know, when you depend on people there and then they're not there, there's going to be a point where you realize that you couldn't depend on them and that you know that you can't depend on them in the future. A plan sponsor really can't afford to pay a advisor nothing. I mean, something for doing nothing. Plan sponsor needs an advisor that does their job by holding the regular meetings, by providing investment education, and all the you know, requirements of putting the plan in a good place in terms of limiting liability. Next on my list is ignoring plan participants. There are too many financial advisors who think they're superstars. They fail to understand their role as the advisor to a 401k plan. They think it's all about picking investments or being flashy or whatnot. I think being a superstar and picking great lineups and thinking you're the greatest thing since Peter Lynch doesn't really mean anything if the advisor ignores the plan participants. Advisors can't neglect participants, especially when a 401k planner is participant directed. You know, participant direction, you have requirements on the RISA 404C, and a good part of limiting liability on the RISA 404C is to make sure that the plan participants who are directing investments are put in a position where they can make educated investment decisions. You know, and they're just, you know, I've been around advisors who think they're rock stars. And they think it's all about them. And they don't really like dealing with participants. And I don't get that. You know, if you don't want to deal with participants, then maybe you should just, you know, deal with trustee-directed plans only, defined benefit plans or something like that. But I've seen a lot of people like that. They're not really big into providing investment education. Well, if you're not really big into providing investment education, you're not really in it to provide, you know, a good service as a 401k financial advisor, because, you know, the reality is that most plans are obviously participant directed. You know, and I keep on, you know, busting the chops over there about my old law firm and, you know, the human resources director. I keep on mentioning her, Pat. And the reason I do that is because I'm still ticked off about the fact that I put the plan in a good setting and then she ignored any advice I gave to her. But, you know, having a plan where there's no investment education to participants with my old law firm, or funds weren't reviewed over a 10-year process, a plan sponsor like that law firm isn't going to get much protection. If a participant sues for losses sustained in their account balance that they personally directed, you know, I was there. I helped that firm out. And of course, you know, the joke was I gave some recommendation for a couple advisors and she hired whoever she wanted to hire and, you know, changed providers without telling me and whatnot. And so I always bring that up because I will always say that in my career of 22 years as an ERISA attorney, I was never more insulted in my life, you know, as an ERISA attorney. Because here I was trying to help the plan out. She was a trustee on the plan, and she was mismanaging it. And I try to, you know, put her in a place where the plan would be approved. And of course, years later, after I left the firm, I got a call about a referral with a problem about the plan. And I call up the other trustee, and they want me to come in to fix that old law firm plan. And Pat got word of it and made sure my meeting was canceled. Take things, you know, as Heath Ledger said in The Dark Knight, why so serious? But she was. So, another reason is going to be controversial, but another reason to get rid of an advisor is by giving awful plan provider referrals. It happens. That's the reality of it. A big reason that financial advisors do get fired is for making bad plan provider referrals. You know, I worked 9.5 years for TPAs. I saw the shoddy work that my administrators committed, and it did cost advisors their plans. You know, a financial advisor is, again, the ombudsman, somebody you can rely on. If they make a referral and it doesn't go well, it speaks ill of the advisor. You know, I don't take things personally. I made a bad referral here or there. I made a bad auditor referral, and to this day, I'm still upset by it. But, you know, my experience with that auditor was good and turned out not to be the case. You know, however, you know, there are referrals out there that are so bad. It puts plan sponsors at risk. You know, people like Jeff Ritchie and Matt Hutchinson, people I knew who are now sitting in federal prison for stealing money from plans. These are people that got referred by advisors. So those are pretty bad referrals that would get an advisor fired. You know, you're referring to a TPA that steals millions of dollars from you. You know, listen, you're going to, you know, hold the advisor responsible for that. The problem with referrals is that, you know, while most of the time it's based on firsthand knowledge, sometimes the referral isn't based on any type of knowledge on whether the referred provider is good or not. And so you're very, you know, cautious about that. You always need to be cautious about referrals. Same thing on Facebook referrals. People refer you a business, you know. I never understood the concept of going on these local Facebook community groups and ask for a referral. Because usually, be you know, you say, for example, in my town, I need somebody to help me with, you know, concrete, you know, sidewalk work or masonry work. And there'll be one woman who will recommend this company, and it's her husband's company. And that's the problem with referrals sometimes. When they're from educated, firsthand experience, they're great. But they're when they're not, or they're based on some type of familiar relationship, or again, we all know the situation where payroll providers get referred in because they referred work to advisors. So there's a little grease in there, as they say. That's the problem with referrals, and that needs to be a consideration. And again, like I said, bad referrals happen, but there are some referrals that are so bad that, you know, a plan sponsor really has no choice but to get rid of their advisor for that. Last but not least on my list is the advisor makes a mistake and just really won't admit it. Everybody makes mistakes. I make mistakes. The best advisors make mistakes. We're all human, so nobody's perfect. Obviously, how many mistakes an advisor makes is really important, and very good advisors really don't make many. And the problem with mistakes is how an advisor deals with them. A good advisor is going to admit when they're wrong, when they made a mistake, and they'll fix the error on their dime. However, as a risk attorney, I've seen too many times where the advisor makes a mistake and refuses to admit it, even going to great lengths to avoid fixing it, including firing the plan sponsor as a client. I'll never forget, you know, two situations really come to mind. The first time I had a former key plan sponsor client that was advised by the advisor to switch providers and neglecting to tell them that there would be a 3% surrender charge on one of the investments in the plan. It was a, I remember it was a stable value or whatever, or it was just a fund that had some sort of surrender charge. The advisor neglected that detail of a 3% surrender charge, and the advisor was willing to make the plan whole until the advisor realized that it was a $40,000 fix. At that point, the advisor stopped returning emails and fired the plan sponsor client to cover, you know, the tracks. And the plan sponsor really at the time wasn't willing to litigate it. I did make a complaint to the Department of Labor that really did not, unfortunately, go anywhere. And my second experience was, I mean, this is one of my favorite stories. I was a administrator for a 401k plan, a 316 administrator, and the TPA involved overpaid plan providers. I remember one time I got a check that was double my 316 fee, the quarterly fee, and I kept it in escrow, and when the TPA asked for it back, I sent it back. The TPA sent me the advisor's fee. A year or so later, the client was changing TPAs and was no longer felt the need for a 316 administrator. So what happened was the advisor in the plan switched firms. He went from one RIA to the other. And he advised me that his old firm was paid four times their fee. Instead of the quarterly fee, they were paying an annual fee for the quarter. What was interesting about that was the advisor suggested that I eat the fee. And it was like a, $14,000 fee. And I'm looking at his email, and I said, why is he coming after me? Go after the TPA that, again, has not consistently overpays providers, tried to overpay me. And unfortunately, with this TPA, I didn't get any reports as to, you know, who got paid what. And so I kept on telling the advisor, he's emailing me, and I said, let me look into this. And then it just dawned on me, why is he coming after me because his old firm got overpaid? You know, he's a financial advisor. He's a plan fiduciary. He can't accept more money than he was contracted to. And I said, you know, I don't want to use his first name, but I said, you know, listen, there's an easy fix for this. Your old RIA firm should just return the fee. They were paid in excess of their contracted fee. And I didn't hear from the advisor. And of course, what does he do? He gets his old firm, he and his old firm contact the plan sponsor, and the plan sponsor emails me telling me that I should eat this fee. And I still can't believe that after telling these advisors that under no circumstance I'm paying this fee and that they have a duty to return the excess fee, that they go to the client and demand that I eat this overpayment. So, very clearly, I email the plan sponsor with a CC to the advisors, and I said, listen, you have these fiduciaries, they're financial advisors, they are fiduciaries to the plan. They contracted a certain fee, 25 BIPs, for the year, That's 0.0625, whatever it is. They got paid 0.25. They got paid 25 basis points for the quarter. It is a prohibited transaction for a fiduciary to take excess compensation. It is a breach of a fiduciary duty to you as a plan sponsor to overpay your plan providers, and you know it by notice. And that if the advisor doesn't return the fee, I will forward this matter to the Department of Labor for investigation. And within a couple days, the advisor changed her mind and agreed to fork over the excess. He worked it out between his old firm and his new firm to return the money to the plan sponsor. So he expected me, you know, it's he had chutzpah, as I say, to, because he changed firms and his old firm booked that money that he probably got paid before he switched to the other firm, it was chutzpah for him to suggest that I should outlay money, which was in excess of my fee, to cover for the fact that he was getting paid four times the fee that he was entitled to. I mean, when I tell people this story, nobody believes it, but it happens. And needless to say, I've never heard from that advisor again, and that this happened several years ago already. And that's the only time in my 316 business that I had any issues regarding plan providers and fees. And that was a huge mistake that the advisor made by trying to shake down another provider to fix this mistake. And again, a perfect example, as I say, that a bad provider and a reason to fire the provider is when they make a mistake. And they don't want to own up to it. And, you know, these are the crazy stories that are there. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. And go to that401ksite.com again for sign up to that 401k National Virtual Conference. And hope to see you guys next week. Take care.